Hey Bulls Nation, welcome to another episode of the Rebuildable Podcast. I'm your host, Matt Gentile, and 2019 is officially coming to a close. Want to spend this episode recapping the last year of Bulls basketball, and also look ahead to 2020. Right now, as it stands here early on December 30th, the Chicago Bulls are 13-20. They're ninth in the Eastern Conference, right on the outside of the playoff picture. But if you've been watching the first 33 games, you know that it's not going to be easy to just get into the lower portion of the Eastern Conference playoff picture. But there's still a lot of season left, so we'll see what happens. As I was preparing to do this podcast, I was trying to think of a word or series of words to describe 2019. So if we just went from January 1st of 2019 through December 31st, how would I best describe the Chicago Bulls in the 2019 calendar year? And one word that kept popping back into my head was erratic. And erratic is a really good way of describing it. Erratic can mean uneven, unstable. It's like a roller coaster. There's a lot of ups and downs, a lot of highs and lows. It seems like a cop-out whenever you say that, oh, well, there's a lot of highs and lows. It's up and down. It's, you know, inconsistent. Because the truth is, the Bulls record-wise, if we look at part of last year and this year, yeah, they haven't been great. But I think our expectation level has been pretty low because this team's been in rebuilding mode the last couple of years. So, yeah, it hasn't been pretty. But there were still moments where I think us as Bulls fans felt something might turn a corner, or we might actually have something good to build off of here. And I just jotted some of them down. I jotted down both highs and lows. And some of the high points, I think, of the 2019 calendar year that we can look back on and say, those were good moves by the Bulls, or that was, you know, a moment of growth from the Bulls. I think if we go back to February, a lot was made about it, and I think maybe too much was made about the month of February. But I think the arrival of Otto Porter did sort of show us that with a competent wing player, somebody that has the ability to impact the game defensively for the Bulls, somebody that can shoot the three, play efficiently, and play alongside Zach LaVine and Lauri Markkanen, you saw how good that unit can be. So I think that was a really, you know, major point of the 2019 calendar year. It also actually, you know, oddly enough, brought some interesting debate among the full among the Bulls fan base. You had a portion of the fan base that was a little concerned with bringing on somebody like Otto Porter. I'd probably fall into that end of the spectrum. They were concerned of the fact that his contract was big. You know, he's being paid above market value. He's not an all-star caliber player, but he's making all-star, superstar caliber money, close to, what, $28, $29 million a season. I think the concern there was lack of cap flexibility for the next 2 years by bringing him on. But on the flip side, and I think there were other people in the Bulls fan base that thought he was bringing value on the court. Unfortunately, he hasn't been healthy this year, but we did see what his impact can be to the Chicago Bulls when he is healthy. So I think that was a high point of the season was the arrival of Otto Porter. The offseason moves. You know, I think the offseason moves had a lot of us feeling pretty good coming into the season. Whether you thought this team was a playoff caliber team or you were still skeptical that they wouldn't be able to even get to the 40-win mark, I think most of us felt that the offseason signings and the moves in the draft were going to improve the Chicago Bulls. If you go back to draft night, not every Bulls fan agrees with the Coby White pick. I gather that. But in my opinion, Coby White was the best player on the board at number 7. He does fulfill a position of need that down the road, you'd like to have a younger, more athletic point guard or combo guard. Now, he is raw, and I think a lot of the efficiency numbers will tell you that there's still a lot of room to grow before he hits his ceiling. But for what he is now, as a rookie, it was a good pick. And the second round pick of Daniel Gafford was the right move. It's a great pickup to have a guy that can impact a game defensively at such a young age and also bring some much-needed athleticism to the front court, especially around the rim. He seems to always find ways to get open, whether it's for lob dunks or just easy baskets around the rim. So those were good pickups in the draft. You look at the free agency signings, Thad Young, Tomas Satoransky. We brought it up a lot leading into the season, and we'll get into how it's bared out later, but at the time when those moves were made, I think a lot of us were okay with it, and a lot of us were excited to see what those additions to the roster would bring, because I think a lot of us were also high on Zach LaVine, and I think what we saw from Zach LaVine throughout 2019, whether it was last season or the beginning of this season, we've seen flashes where he can be an impact player on this team. Whether or not he's a superstar or a true number one or even a true number two, you know, that's a different debate. But I think we know that he at least is somebody that can impact a game. There's no doubt about that. He can impact a game just off of his athleticism and offensive prowess alone. And that was a question coming into last season. You know, so again, I'm looking at all of 2019. So that encompasses last season, the 2019 season as well. And if you remember, when he signed his contract in the 2018 offseason, there was concern because of the knee injury. He was sort of up and down on the court that year. So this was big to see him actually become a more consistent scorer on the Bulls during the 2019 season. And there's been some up and down moments this year, but I think he's now starting to even out a little bit. We see the type of player he can be in the league. Wendell Carter. I mean, Wendell Carter, we saw it last year, but there's been more of it this season where we are seeing him grow before our eyes. This is a guy that's turning into a leader on the court. He's turning into a steady defensive force on the Bulls roster. And even offensively, you know, we're seeing him grow a lot more as a more involved player on offense. He's becoming somebody that is almost a slam dunk for a double-double or near double-double. He's, you know, averaging close to 12 points and almost 10 rebounds a game. So, you know, a dirty double-double, and there's nothing wrong with that. And I think he's going to continue to get better. You know, I just hope he starts to take more outside shots, starts to believe in himself a little bit more from three-point range. We saw in that last game against Atlanta that he canned two three-pointers in that game, and you'd like to see more of that as time goes on, because if he adds that facet to his game, you know, sky's the limit for what he can do with this team. So those were some of those moments that made us feel good. But then on the flip side, there were some low points that gave us pause. And I think probably number one on my list would be the decision to extend and hire Jim Boylan as head coach. You know, firing Fred Hoiberg at the end of in December of 2018 and bringing in Boylan as the acting head coach, we saw that near mutiny happen. And it sort of lingered early into January of this year. Now, things got better as the 2019 season progressed, and it seemed like some of the guys were starting to at least develop a little more of a working relationship with him. But I think the decision to not do a coaching search and to just rely on Jim Boylan to be the head coach going forward, to give him that extension, was a big mistake. Yeah, and I've brought it up on the podcast so many times, I don't want to keep beating a dead horse. But I think we're seeing how that's affected a lot of those positives that I just talked about. You know, the off-season signings of Thad Young, Tomas Satoransky, you know, handling of Coby White, handling of Daniel Gafford. If you really think about it, Jim Boylan's inefficiencies or inabilities to manage minutes, to manage the rotations, especially early in the season, I think have cost the Bulls. I think it's one of the reasons why right now they are 13-20 instead of, you know, maybe 17-16, you know, or a lot in a little bit better shape or competing within the playoff picture of the Eastern Conference. I think that's why. They had a very easy start to the schedule on paper. And the fact that they are 7 games under .500 is sort of mind-boggling. Because I really believe with the semblance of talent they have right now, they should be in better shape. But I think some of those decisions that Jim Boylan's made, they have affected the outcome of games. You know, think about how many games have been blown in the fourth quarter. If we look at that, that's definitely one of the biggest lows of 2019, and definitely within this 2019-2020 season. There's been a lot of games where the Bulls have had leads, large leads, and they've blown them because minutes weren't managed correctly. The second unit was kept in too long. Starters weren't brought back in or staggered in correctly. And that falls on your head coach. Your head coach has to be able to manage all of that. Again, I don't want to talk about this too much. I want to just kind of do a lighthearted recap here. But if you've listened to this podcast in previous episodes, you know my thoughts on Jim Boylan. We've had many guests on that have made this point too, that some of those costly decisions that he's made have affected the Bulls' record this season. I think, though, another one, and probably 1A, I guess, if Jim Boylan's like one of the biggest lows of the 2019 calendar year, another one is Lauri Markkanen. For the Chicago Bulls, I think, to go where they want to go, right, where that front office envisions this team going, to be a playoff contender and to be a sexy team that a big-time free agent or a big-time superstar or all-star who's looking to change teams considers, Lauri Markkanen has to be a catalyst. And that's been very disturbing to watch early this season. We haven't seen Lauri Markkanen play even to the level he's played to in the last 2 years. Now, the month of December has been a little bit better for Lauri. If you look at the splits even, if you remember early in the year, I mean, he was shooting well below career averages. He was shooting well below 40%. And from three-point range, he was shooting well below 35%, nowhere near his career averages. Now, in December, things have picked up a bit. He's averaging just under 18 points a game. He's shooting 50% from the field. And his three-point percentage has picked up. He's over 40% for the month of December. The one thing that's interesting, his rebounding numbers have gone down this year. And that was something that, you know, he was pretty steady on his rookie year and in his second year. So that's been sort of unsettling. Now, you hope that he can build off of a good December, but it's just not what you want from a guy that you expected to be an all-star or near all-star caliber player. I think that's what we all were expecting out of Lauri Markkanen. And in year three, he hasn't delivered. And in order for the Bulls to get where they want to go, he's got to get there. Again, this is something I've brought up on multiple episodes of our podcast, and I think that's been one of the biggest low points of the 2019 calendar year, is that Lauri Markkanen hasn't taken that next step, and he's got to take that next step for the Chicago Bulls to get to where they want to go. So we've been put through this ringer, I guess, of emotions, right, with all of these things that have gone down in the 2019 calendar year. And as I was thinking about that, I also thought about some what-if scenarios. We have the benefit of hindsight. And it got me thinking, though. Yeah, I brought up the signings of Thad Young and Tomas Satoransky. And I'm still okay with those moves that happened. But I know that this has come up in some discussions in Bulls Twitter, but also, you know, I heard it actually also on the Waddle and Sylvie show on ESPN 1000 just before the holidays. They had brought up a scenario, and it got me thinking. What if the Chicago Bulls, this past offseason, that instead of signing Thad Young and Tomas Satoransky, had decided to pour most of that cap space they had into Malcolm Brogdon? Now, I believe some money still might have had to been moved. I'm trying to remember the exact cap situation, but if they had been able to make it work, Malcolm Brogdon is the poster child for guys that love the numbers. He's a guy that shoots close to 50%, 40% from three-point range, and shoots about 90% from the foul line. So he's part of that illustrious 50-40-90 club. And last year with Milwaukee, in his 64 games he played, he shot just a little over 50% from the field, just over 42% from three-point range, and just under 93% from the foul line. So he was really efficient last year. The Pacers ended up paying him the money that he was seeking. He ended up getting an $85 million contract over 4 years. So he's making about $21.25 million a season. I wonder, if you put Malcolm Brogdon in this situation now, would the Bulls be better? And I'm actually struggling to answer that. I'm kind of interested what all of you in Bulls Nation think. Any of you that are listening, feel free to tweet a reply to this episode or tweet at me, mgentile88, or at rebuild_a_bull. I'm curious what you think. Had the Bulls signed Malcolm Brogdon instead of Tomas Satoransky and Thad Young, would the Bulls actually be in a better situation now? I brought up the Jim Boylan inefficiencies, but could they have been masked by a guy like Brogdon playing the point guard role in the Chicago Bulls? Now, he's in a more featured role in Indiana, so that shooting percentage is going down because the number of shots have gone up. He's taking about 3 more field goals on average a game. Over time, that's going to affect your numbers as well. But he's averaging close to 18 points a game. He's increased his assist numbers. So he was around 3 or 4 assists a game before he got to Indiana. His 3 years with the Bucks, he was averaging close to 3 or 4 assists a game. Now he's around 7 to 8 this year with the Pacers in 26 games. So I wonder if he's in this role in Chicago, could that have improved the Bulls? I'm inclined to say yes. Tomas Satoransky's unevenness to start the year, I would like to blame that on Jim Boylan, but I don't know if I can. Tomas Satoransky, if we look at his year, he's averaging around 10 points a game, and he's shooting just under 40% from three, and shooting about 46% from the field. You know, he's been good, but does he make the same impact that somebody like Malcolm Brogdon can make? I don't think so. To me, it might have been worth a little extra money sacrificing the signing of Thaddeus Young to add somebody like Malcolm Brogdon. It's food for thought. Food for thought. It was what if that kind of popped in my head too. So another what if I want to throw out there. It was one that I kind of hinted to. What if the Bulls didn't acquire Otto Porter? So if they didn't trade Jabari Parker and Bobby Portis for Otto Porter, but instead maybe got an expiring contract and draft picks, would that actually have been the better move long term? And that's another tough one, because the only thing that Otto Porter does negatively to the Chicago Bulls situation right now, besides the fact that he's hurt, is that he takes up the cap space. He's getting paid around, what, $29 million a year. He has a player option next year. So it's tying down your cap flexibility with a guy like that. Now, outside from that, and when he is healthy, he is an impact player. His health is a big question mark going into 2020 here, because his day-to-day, week-to-week statuses have been stretched out here. We've been hearing he was day-to-day since November, and here we are, and now we're being told that he might not be ready till around the All-Star break. And there's sort of a lingering feeling that this might be an injury that could shelve him most of, if not the whole season. It hasn't been reported, it hasn't been announced that, but there's sort of this unsettling feeling amongst the fan base, and even amongst some of the reporters that cover the team, where there's legitimate questions about whether or not he might come back this year. I mean, kind of reminds me of the whole Denzel Valentine situation that we had to deal with last year, where Denzel was, you know, sort of a week-to-week, month-to-month proposition, and before you knew it, he never stepped on the court all of 2019. It makes you wonder, if you didn't make that trade, though, taking out the injury from this year, but if you didn't make that trade, would it have been better off to have the cap flexibility? You know, would it have been better off to acquire draft equity and maybe have made some more noise in last year's draft? Would have been interesting. Would have been interesting. Or even this year's draft, because it does appear to be a pretty decent draft in 2020. But those were the two what-ifs I thought of. What if Malcolm Brogdon was a Chicago Bull? And what if Otto Porter hadn't been acquired by the Bulls around last year's trade deadline? It's something to chew on. And I'm kind of curious what you in Bulls Nation think. So feel free, again, tweet me at mgentile88 or rebuild_a_bowl. I'm curious to get your thoughts on that. And, you know, with Malcolm Brogdon, I kind of remember, I know other Bulls fans probably would have agreed with me. I wasn't totally sold on him being an answer. You know, I don't want to get it twisted here. And I was more open to the idea. I wasn't vehemently against it. I wasn't vehemently for it. I know there seemed to be a lot of strong opinions either way on whether or not Malcolm Brogdon was a fit for this roster or, you know, would have been a good signing. I would have been okay with seeing how it would have gone. I mean, kind of how I view the Tomas Satoransky signing. Open to the idea. Think both had skills that could have been used on this team. So I think he's been a valuable asset to the Pacers, no doubt. You know, I think Malcolm Brogdon's been a good piece for them, especially with Victor Oladipo out of the lineup. And I think when Oladipo gets back, I'm then curious to see if Malcolm Brogdon, you know, continues to play at the pace he's playing. Because if he does, then that could have been interesting if he had been here playing with Zach and even Lauri Markkanen. So before I wrap up and put a bow on this 2019 calendar year, what can we expect in 2020? I think that's the question that a lot of us are wondering. Is this team going to finally pivot in the right direction in terms of what they do on the court? I think we all have questions and we're kind of wondering what's going to happen in 2020 with, you know, the front office, with maybe even Jim Boylan. That's not going to be answered until the end of the season. And we have a long way to go before that happens. The way that this podcast will go, too, will probably change radically come April. But for now, for the next 4 months, where's this thing going? And it's, I think, the million-dollar question. If we do see the Lauri Markkanen we saw in December, things could go pretty well. If we see Thad Young being used correctly, getting more minutes, being able to play a little bit more with the starting lineup, finding ways to get him involved more, I think that some of this could be salvaged, and it could be interesting to see where things go in terms of the playoff race. But even if you're in the Eastern Conference, if you want to get into the playoff picture, you have to start getting some impressive wins. And I know right out of the gate in January, they're going to have some interesting opponents. I think they got the Celtics twice on the schedule. They're going to have the Mavericks on their schedule. I'm not saying that you have to have, you know, world-beating victories against those teams, but you do have to start stringing some wins against some of the top teams in the league. It's just the way that it works if you want to get into the playoff picture. You have to have a couple games where your top players come to play and you beat a really good opponent. Because if you just feast on the bad teams in the league, you'll end up at 35 wins. And, you know, that's where you kind of get the sense right now things are headed, that it's going to be a year where they maybe get to 30, 32 wins if they're lucky. And I think they have better talent than just a 30-win team. I really do. I think that this team should be right around the 40-win mark. You know, slightly below it, slightly above it, but they should be competing for that. And it's just, it hasn't shaken out that way. But if we expect things to turn around, then they do have to start doing that. They have to start getting wins against some of the better teams in the league. And it has to come from guys like Lauri Markkanen and Zach LaVine. Wendell Carter Jr. hopefully continues to make progress. Hopefully Coby White, you know, goes from just a spark plug or streaky player to somebody that is a little more efficient and a little more under control. If that starts happening, then yes, the Chicago Bulls are going to be knocking on the door of the Eastern Conference playoff picture, and it's not like the Orlando Magic are world beaters here. I would like to see these young guys playing in April, in late April, playing in playoff series. I think it would be good for Zach LaVine. I think it would be great for Lauri Markkanen, Coby White, Wendell Carter. There's young guys on this roster that should get some playoff experience. There's no reason why they shouldn't. And I do hope that that happens. Now, I would also hope that the front office, John Paxson, Gar Foreman, ownership, Michael and Jerry Reinsdorf, that they wouldn't think that because the Bulls got into the playoffs in a weak Eastern Conference, that Jim Boylan is absolved of his basketball sins. I would hope that wouldn't happen either. If they do get into the playoffs, that they do reflect and see what changes need to happen, because there's no reason that the Bulls should have started as slowly as they did in this season. I'm excited to get through more of this in the new year. We're going to have some good guests on tap. I know we got a good guest coming out of the gate for our first episode in 2020. I'll have more information on that. It's going to be somebody that's going to join Big Dave Watson as a member of the Rebuildable Three Timers Club. So I'm really, really looking forward to that. 2019 was a complete blast, and I have to thank everybody in Bulls Nation who has been listening to the Rebuildable podcast since we started in April. It's been a fun journey, and I'm looking forward to even doing more episodes in the new year. So I hope everybody has a safe and healthy new year. Thank you for listening to the Rebuildable Podcast. Be sure to check out more episodes on Google Play, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and on Rebuildable.com.